We are still working with Gideon. Gideon has done some fantastic things. He's going to do some more today and next Sunday. We're in Judges chapter 8, verses 1 to 23. In 1972, the Miami Dolphins, you know what's coming, they had the perfect season. They finished without a flaw, all the way through. I was in the stands when Bob Greasy went down with a broken leg. They picked right up, didn't miss a beat, and kept right on going. They finished the season perfectly. In the 80s, the early 80s, I believe, the Chicago Bears had the same thing going. I think they were up to maybe 11 or 12. And they came down to Miami. I was in the stands again. Here come the Bears. The Bears were undefeated, and we weren't doing all that well. But the Dolphins beat them, and no longer unbeaten. And the players of that 72 team, when every team in the league had at least one loss, they would get together and have a celebration. Well, they celebrated that night. And more recently, the New England Patriots. They went into the Super Bowl undefeated, but they lost the Super Bowl to the New York Giants. They didn't finish. That's why it's such a special thing when you hear Don Shula come on and say, "We had the perfect season. Nobody else has done it." Finishing is hard, and finishing is what we have to do in order to serve the Lord. It's almost as though if you lose a game in the NFL, well, you've missed the Holy Grail. You haven't done it. So we need the same kind of concentration in the Christian life. We need to serve the Lord continually and finish the job that was done. We need to exhort one another and so much more as you see the day approaching, Hebrews 10:25. We have to stick with it until it's done. We need to be just as excited, I believe, in the fourth quarter as we were at the kickoff, the opening kickoff. See, Gideon knew the importance of finishing well, and that's where we are today. God has given victory over 135 Midianites and Amalekites, and he had a force of only 300 men. That's a pretty big job. Oh, 120 of the enemy had been killed, and yet he wasn't finished. He had to finish the job that God gave him to do. He finished the job. And I'm doing this a little bit out of order because of the way I want to present it. We're starting with verses 10 to 12. He finished the job. He used the same men, only 300. He could have said, well, 300 was okay for that group, but now I need more men and get some more. No, he used the same 300 because you don't change horses in midstream. You don't change the rules just because you've had a win. In 1944, the Democrats used that same slogan because the war was on. We're in 1944, we're still in the war. And the Democrats said, don't change horses in midstream. And we got our word at that time. We didn't have TVs and all that, but we got our news from the movies. They had about an old 10-minute, maybe 15-minute news reel that came on. And I remember hearing Dewey. Dewey was the opponent, the Republican opponent. And he said, "We are not amphibious. We want to get across." Well, they didn't change horses, and they got across. But that's what Gideon was doing. See, Gideon was not changing horses. He was doing what the Lord had given him to do. He used the same men. He stayed with the same tried and true group. They had passed the original test, remember? They had gone, they said, when he said, go home if you're afraid, and most of them went home, and then they still had a thousand, and they said, oh, that's too many. And so let them drink water, and they picked up water like this and didn't lap it like a dog does. They passed the tests. And then when it came to the big battle, they did exactly what he told them. They shattered their things, they raised their court torches up, and they blew their trumpets, and they shouted, the sword of the Lord and Gideon. So they did exactly what he said. These were tried and true men. And then when it got to the place where the battle was going well, that is, the Lord was causing all that confusion down there, and they were killing each other, they didn't jump in there and try to do something. They stood there. The Lord said, stay in there, and they stood there. They knew to do exactly what the Lord had done. So he says, I'm going to use the same people. And that's what he did. And then he remembered God's plan. In 7:14, he did just exactly what God said. And that, my slogan here is, don't try to improve on God. Do what God has said. Do it God's way. He said in 7:14, he says, this is nothing else but the sword of the Lord and the son of Joash, the man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp. He's delivered into Midian, the whole camp. Oh, wow. You mean everyone? Yes, everyone. See? And so he's using God's plans. I've got to get the rest of them. They've run away, but I've got to go chase them because God said, get them all, get the whole camp. And then he used the same basic strategy. Here it is. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. God said, this is the way to do it, and he did. He followed the Lord, and the plan changed somewhat. He didn't use pitchers and trumpets and torches, but he did sneak in on them. That's what he did before. Remember, he snuck in the middle of the night? Well, he sneaked in on these people. He went, when he finally caught where they were, east of Jordan, he went in there, and he didn't go in from the east. They would expect you from the west. They expect you to come in from the west. He circled around them and came in from the east and got them again. So he was doing it the Lord's way, and he routed the whole army, and their two kings ran away, and he caught them and finished it up. So he finished. He finished the work God gave him to do. Well, you say, well, that was easy. No, that was hard. Because he did it in spite of some great obstacles. And here's where we're going with this. Some great obstacles he had to overcome in order to finish the work that God gave him. He finished in spite of criticism. In chapter 8, verse 1, he says this. Then the Ephraimites said to him, what have you done to us not to call us when you went to fight against the Midianites? See, Ephraim was a proud tribe. They thought, well, we're the best. Joshua was from Ephraim. They point out, oh, Joshua is our man. He's from Ephraim. He's an Ephraimite. And of course, Gideon was not from there. Gideon was from Manasseh. And Ephraim and Manasseh were fighting all the time. They were always in against each other. There was a great rivalry between them. The background, you may help to know the background here. These two men, Ephraim and Manasseh, were sons of Joseph. They were grandsons of Jacob. And they were not two of the 12. Joseph was one of the 12. But when Jacob adopted these two grandsons, he said to Joseph, I'm adopting your two grandsons, and he gave them equal rights with the other sons. That's how come the two of them are there. Manasseh was the older grandson. Ephraim was the younger. And when Jacob, whose name is really Israel, remember, he was legally blind. He could hardly see. And he went to bless the two children. He said to Joseph, bring your children here. Bring Ephraim and Manasseh here. I want to bless them. And Manasseh put Jacob opposite the right hand. Jacob put Manasseh opposite the right hand and Ephraim opposite the left. He said he thought that Manasseh, the older, should get the blessing. Well, Jacob crossed his hands and he gave the blessing to Ephraim. Because Ephraim was the one he wanted to bless best. So the reason for that is, what he's saying was, Ephraim was the blessed one, and that's why the big fight. But also, there are facts about the call they have mixed up. Wait a minute. we knew there was an impending invasion. Did you miss the fact that all these people had come over, all the Midianites and the Amalekites were over, had come over across the Jordan, and here they were ready to pounce on us? Did you miss that? Did you not see it? See? He could have said all that. But they should have been there. They should have volunteered, even though he didn't send a messenger to them in particular. The truth is, they just didn't show up. Later on, the psalmist said about Ephraim, he said, the Ephraimites, armed with bow, turned back in the day of battle. Now, I wasn't talking about this. He was talking about the time when of Eli, when the Ark of the Covenant was lost in battle. And he said, they turned back and left the Ark there. So Gideon really was selfish, and he was trying to get something that he to put Gideon down in the process. So he was selfish, but Gideon was selfless. He tried a little diplomacy on him. He says, "Wow, what have I to do? What have I done in comparison to you?" That's in 2A. What have I done in comparison to you? See, they had gone out and got the two captains, Zeb and Gib, and said, what have I done in comparison to you? Look what you did. And are not the gleanings of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer, his family? He said, the things you did, look, you get the gleanings. We did the big thing. We did the whole big field, but you did a gleaning, and look what you did. You got two of these captains. You cut their heads off and brought them to me. And so you did much better than I did. And so he calmed their anger by that. So here he was. He had the right to say to them, you should have been there. If you had been there, it would have been a lot easier, whatever. You know, could have done all of that. But no, he didn't do that. See, it's done. I used to have a man in the American Legion. He would stand up and say, men, what's did's did. That's it. What's did's did. And it's all over. Don't bring it all up. So he calmed their fears. He understood that a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15:1. So see, Satan tries to sow discord among the brethren. He does that today. Divisions come sometimes because of pride, hurt feelings, differences economically, educationally, socially. See, it could be even personality differences, or maybe some minor doctrine. Different things come, and Satan puts a wedge in. He'll put something in your mind. What about that? You know, whatever it is, it's his purpose to drive a wedge between them. I brought a wedge with me, and it's in my briefcase. I was going to show you something. I was going to put a wedge right here. A wedge between me and this podium. Now, you try to drive a wedge in there. Oh, you push it in there. Push. What has to happen if that doesn't work? One of us has to move. Now, I can stand here and say, if he would just move, we'd be all right. If he'd just give up, if he'd give in, tell me I'm right. No, all I have to do is back off just a little bit. The wedge is gone. And sometimes that happens to us. So the wedge comes in. Satan gets his way because we haven't taken the time just to back off a little bit. Now, so he got criticism. And criticism will come our way. But he was criticized, but he went on. He backed off a little bit. The wedge is gone. He finished in spite of fatigue. Verse 4 says this. When Gideon came to Jordan, he and the 300 men who were with him crossed over, exhausted, and yet in pursuit. Exhaustion is the enemy of any protracted enterprise. Early on, the initial excitement gets you going. There's nothing greater in a church than doing a building. I've been in a couple of those. We're going to have a building. Oh, wonderful. And everybody gets excited, and everybody gets up there and puts nails in the boards and all that. And the whole church is just excited about it. Fred remembers when they built this place. You get all excited, and everybody wants to work. Everybody wants to give because there's an excitement in the air at the beginning. See? But later on, fatigue sets in. So What kept Gideon on task in the fatigue time? Well, these words of the Lord, I think, kept ringing in his ears, especially the last part. He said, remember back a ways, he said, go in this your might, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. And here it is. Have I not sent you? See? Oh, so you're tired. Have I not sent you? See? Oh, you're discouraged. Somebody criticized you. Have I not sent you? You keep that in mind. Mentioned Chuck Swindoll. Interesting. In his book, Growing Strong in the Seasons of Life, he writes about a backwoods preacher. He says this. This backwood preacher was not very eloquent, but often he was right on the mark. God stepped into his life, and though he was not very educated, he was devoted to his heavenly calling. He listened one day to a proud preacher, well-educated, was very impressed with his own background and his skills, and showing little power of God in his life. When the sermon was over and most of the people had left, this old preacher went up to this young man and said, young man, was you sent or did you just went? Well, it'll make a difference when you get down the road. When you get in the middle of the work, you'll find out whether you were sent or just went. And you have to say to yourself, I know I was sent. God sent me. God gave me this job to do, and I'm going to do it. See, that's the voice of the past. Remember from whence you have come. Then there's the victory of the present. Remember how Gideon's men had obeyed the word of the Lord? Right? They broke their jars. They blew their trumpets. They shouted. They stood in place while the Lord worked on those people. And the victory gave Gideon courage and stamina to go on. See? But you have to remember what God is doing. There's a hymn. Count your many blessings. This is what we need to do. Look what God has done. Oh, I'm in a big job here. What am I going to do? Look at everybody's against me. Look what God did for you last week or last year or last month. He did it then. He can do it now. See, that's the idea. Look at the victory of the present. And then have a vision for the future. If God defeated the Midianites, he commanded a 100% defeat. 100%. There were 135,000 Midianites at the beginning. And 120,000 were killed. Well, that's not all of them. That leaves 15,000. 89% were killed. He was only 89% done. He has 11% yet to go. And so he has to have a vision for that. God said for me to do all of that. He killed all of the Midianites. So I've got to get that other 11% done. Don't be satisfied with 89%. Go for the whole 100%. That's what God called us to do. And that's what Paul meant when he said, I have finished the course. So he finished in spite of criticism, in spite of fatigue, but also he finished in spite of indifference. Now he said to the men of Succoth, please give loaves of bread to the people who follow me, for they are exhausted, and I am in pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. And the leaders of Succoth said, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your hand now, that we should give you bread? The indifference here of Succoth is this. Gideon reasoned, well, I've been out fighting for Israel. You are a part of Israel. And I've been delivering the enemy from you. Therefore, I have the right to ask for help from your citizens. Makes sense to me. That's the old law of confiscation. The army has the right to confiscate whatever they need from the people. But the people of Succoth thought something else. They said, you don't have those kings in hand yet. If you miss, you don't get them, and they find out that we helped you, we're in trouble. Remember, they've been in all this this way under the Canaanites for a long while. So, now you missed it. So Gideon said, "For this cause, when the Lord has delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with thorns in the wilderness and with briars." But they were not the only ones indifferent. There was also the indifference of Penuel. He went up from there to Penuel and spoke to them in the same way. And the men of Penuel answered him in the same way that men of Succoth had. And Gideon answered them, "When I come back in peace, I will tear down this tower." Apparently the tower was a place where they would run in case of enemy attack or something. "I'll tear down this tower." See? So that was the indifference of Penuel. But then there's the cost of indifference. In 15 to 17, he says this, "Then it came to pass when he came to the men of Succoth, and he said, 'Here are Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you ridiculed me, saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in your hand, that we should give your bread to your weary men?' So he took the elders of the city and the thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth." Now, by that, I presume they mean that he took these elders and he dragged them through the briars in the wilderness, or he got the briars and brought them to them, but they were taught a great lesson by that. And then he says, he tore down the tower of Penuel and killed the men of the city. That's the cost of the indifference to the things of the Lord. And then he finished in spite of temptation. When the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson also. You shall have delivered, you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." You've delivered us. Well, they offered him the throne. They offered him a dynasty. You rule over us, and then after you die, your son, after that, your grandson, you'll have the ruling for a long while yet. And then they said, "God, you have delivered us. You have delivered us. What happened to God?" See, God delivered them. And the people didn't say it, and Gideon didn't say it either. Gideon certainly knew, but he didn't say so. So, and really nowhere in this chapter does he say, "God gave the victory." Gideon gave the victory, and he didn't challenge them. So they gave Gideon credit for that he did not deserve. They also made an offer that they had no right to make. They had no right to say, "You be a king." Israel was not a democracy. Israel was a theocracy. God ruled over them. God was their king, and God was the king maker. And if God decided for them to have a king, they could have a king. But not until. Later on, God did. And David was his king. So, Gideon, to his credit, declined both. Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor will my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." However, a seed, I think, had been sown here. We're going to see later that it's a kind of a puffed up thing, a seed of personal worth, a seed of self-importance, independence, see? He decided, "I won't be king." He didn't say, "The Lord doesn't want me to be king. I won't be king." So it's kind of a seed, I think, that was sown here. And then, see, when he was behind the wine press, and he was cowering from the enemy, and was afraid of everything around him, then God could say to him, "You are a mighty man of valor." Now, I think, God is not going to be able to say that. He's finished the work God gave him to do, but he hasn't finished his race of life. He still has some life to live. And we haven't finished our race either. We have some life to live. See, as long as there's a pulse, there's a purpose. Now, does anyone really finish? You might ask, well, does anyone really finish a life? Does anyone really finish the course God gave him? Well, Jesus said on the cross, "It is finished." He finished that. Jesus finished his course. Paul said, as we mentioned, I have fought the good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Paul finished his course. In John 17:4, Jesus said, I have finished the work you gave me to do. And then our Hebrews for today, Hebrews 12:1-2. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily ensnare us.